Need a quick hit of Marketing Smarts inspiration? Here it is. We have lifted portions of our Marketing Smarts episodes for those of you who need a quick jolt of marketing savviness right now. Refer to the description for how to find a longer form version. And with that, here it is.
And today we're going to cover a topic that can get just a tad bit, or a lot, dense, and is often perceived as a bit of a black box for lots of companies. And that is brand architecture. And really specifically, our argument for how it empowers sub-brands and gives them a reason to exist within the master brand and stand on their own where applicable. And before we really get into it, we should say that this episode is really more of a 201 or even 301 topic. So if you feel like you're more of a beginner, tap into any of our brand fundamentals episodes and start there first. So how to create, fill in the blank, your brand story, your brand character, your brand toolkit, those types of things.
Yes, very good suggestion. And before we jump into the episode, let's start with some definitions just to make sure we're all clear. So brand architecture is a strategy that organizes the sub-brands and their offerings under a single overarching master brand. So taking all the products, services, et cetera, that are offered and giving them a structure that makes sense and enables the business to proceed with intention.
Exactly. And with that, we will get into how brand architecture empowers sub-brands. So number one, it gives each sub-brand a home under the master brand. And I will take this one, and I'm sure Anne will have some things to say as well. So there comes a time in a company's life cycle when there are multiple fill-in-the-blank brands, products, services, offerings, and they all need to be organized in a way that ties them back to the overall master brand. Another way to think about this that might be more intuitive is a parent brand versus a child brand. And thinking about it in terms of they all have a role in the family. So they know what that role is, and then they also know how they contribute to the bigger picture of the parent brand. So what does this look like? Well, first, the master brand must be clearly defined. So we already said in the beginning, if you feel like you're a beginner, all those tools, that's what we're talking about. So you have to develop the overall master or parent brand first, because if you don't do that, then you're not going to be able to effectively define and then leverage those sub-brands. So if you have that entire what we call toolkit developed for the master brand, then you are able to go ahead and orient that in ways that will work for the sub brands. And what I mean by that is that you're going to make selective, nuanced changes and develop additional tools that each individual sub brand needs, but that ties to the higher level strategy of the master or parent brand. I want to be crystal clear here. This does not mean that you go and create completely new brands for all of the sub-brands. The exercise is to take what exists at that high level and to the point of giving each sub-brand a home, you nuance the tools so that they work for each sub-brand in ways that are both similar but also slightly different from the master brand. And we'll talk more about the full toolkit in the next point, so I'm not going to really get into the details of that until we go there. But just know, must have a fully defined master brand, and then must be able to have enough tools to apply to the sub-brands.
Yeah, and just to kind of break this down in a couple of different versions of how you might be thinking about this. So, for example, if you're a small business, your master brand is probably your business, right?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So you should be thinking about that in the context of your business. And then as you add capabilities or services or offerings, those become your sub-brand. So then you're going to think about how those individual things start to ladder up to your overarching brand. And it helps you to better categorize them, describe them, define them, sell them, scale them, all those things that you need to do from a business context. And we're going to talk about the business side of this a lot today, okay? So you can think about that in one way. And that's also a lot of ways that the B2B businesses thinks about it, right? So it's like, okay, I have this big, you know, company style brand, my master brand here. How am I taking all of those offerings, all of those services, all of those opportunities for me to sell things to my clients? And then how do those all link together into something that is uniquely me, authentically me, that then becomes something that I can develop brand love against, that I can develop marketing against, that I can develop sales strategies against, all those things. Now, there's also consumer products, which is where a lot of people go with this. And they're like, oh yeah, brand architecture is for consumer products. And I did this for years in P&G land, where you have like Downy, for example, which is a brand I worked on. Downy has the main parent brand, right? So that is the actual brand. And it actually has a flagship product associated with it, which is the fabric enhancer. It has since now has Unstoppables, which is the beads. It also has dryer sheets. And it, sometimes I think now it has some sort of wash. I can't remember what the latest offering of it is. Those are the sub-brands, right? They all kind of play and they connect. And as you said, the family, they're all part of that family, but they all have different rules to play within that family. That's where we're going to get into details in a minute. But the important thing is to notice that there are certain cues. So if we can get that into your head right now, you can start thinking about, oh yeah, there's certain things that are thematic or strings that are pulled through that make it feel like it's cohesive, that makes it feel like it's all coming together.
Yes, yes. Very good example. All right, and number two, and like we said, these two points really work well together. So it's kind of a 1A, if you will, but point two. It gives each sub-brand its own visual and verbal toolkit for strategy creation. So to the point above about nuancing the strategic tools, that's the start of the toolkit. From there, you have to take a look at all of the different executional elements that exist and complement them with additional ones for each sub-brand. So this is where, like Anne just gave the Downy example, right? Downy itself has a master brand toolkit for Downy specifically. When you get into things like Unstoppables, there are elements like the Unstoppables logo, mark, sub-brand mark, that look different, or colors that are different, or, you know, the bottles, I don't know if they still are because I haven't purchased them in a while, were black, whereas they're the black. Downy was like that lighter blue color, right? So if you, again, if you can picture this in your head, it'll be really helpful to this point. So this is inclusive of things like logos, colors, fonts, icons, photography treatment, messaging toolkits, visual execution. I said a lot of things there, right? So hopefully you've listened to a lot of our episodes one-on-one about all of those different things. But again, I will give an example because we think throughout this will really help to bring these things to life so that you can picture it. So Coke, everybody knows Coke, right? It's a really iconic brand. And there are some signature things about that master brand that exist and that have continued to exist for a very, very long period of time. That's why it's iconic. So the red color of the traditional brand of Coca-Cola, the font that Coca-Cola is in, Anne even mentioned as I was drafting this episode, the bottle shape, right? Mm-hmm. So like the historic glass bottle, everybody can picture that,
the silhouette bottle, yep.
The silhouette, and it's still the same, although it comes in plastic and all other things now, right? Those are some of those iconic brand elements that live at the Coca-Cola brand level. However, Coca-Cola also has sub-brands, right? So we'll talk about two, Diet Coke and Coke Zero. If you think about Diet Coke, it still uses the red color, although in a lot more minimal way, and it is predominantly silver. So whether we're talking about the can, it's just the silver can. If you're talking about a label on one of the plastic bottles or even glass, it's silver predominantly. And then the Diet is a completely different font. Right. So there's enough connection that you can sit a can of Coke and a can of Diet Coke next to each other, and you would say they're part of the same family.
Yep.
But they each have very choiceful, different design elements that are leveraging some of the original Coca-Cola master brand, but then bringing in elements that are complementary but specific to Diet Coke. Same when you think about Coke Zero. Black is leveraged more. However, well, I would say black is a pretty big departure. The Diet Coke kind of lives in the middle, right? But what they have done is continue to use the same font for Coke Zero, that script font, so that there is that connection point to that, to the master brand. So you can see kind of varying degrees. And if I think about the way that the lineup is, it goes Coca-Cola, Diet Coke is probably a little more closely linked. Coke Zero, which is a newer innovation, flexes a little bit further. So you can start to see how you can make all of these elements play together. But if you want to look at a brand that does this tremendously well and has throughout the entire history of the brand, Coke is one of them. And when you break it down to these really specific elements, you can see how important they are to making sure that each sub-brand can live on its own, but also has the halo of the master brand of Coca-Cola.
Yeah, and a lot of people will say, well, that's great for a consumer product. How does that translate to a B2B business? Is actually very, very similar. So obviously you have the visual element of your toolkit, which is making sure that your visual and your verbal elements are translated appropriately across from your master brand into your sub brand. But it's also in the naming of your services, right? It's in the way that you talk about the services. And that's a big thing that we talk about is that consistency. And that's where a lot of people sometimes get in trouble. And I know you talk about the color of the rainbow. Whenever time everybody wants to do something new, they make it some sort of random different color, or they wanted this one, they want to kind of be a little bit more edgy. So they're going to talk about it a little bit more in an edgy way for that one. And everybody's like, that doesn't feel like
the
brand.
Where did that come from?
Right? Where does that come from? And then people start getting very disconnected in their brain because they can't link that to you. Then you lose your equity, right? You lose the opportunity to continue to scale your equity and build your equity, but you also lose that attribution, and you have to work very, very hard then for that person to realize that's you, because it's not connecting in their brain because the elements and the cues aren't there to say, oh yeah, I can see why that's part of that company. Oh, that makes me understand that company more. Therefore, 1 + 1 = 5 versus you developing some sort of random sub brand. And now it becomes dilutive to your actual business because people are like, I don't understand why it comes from them and it's not making sense. So it's like 1 + 1 = -2, right? So that's why you do it. And these are bigger overarching rationales for why you do this, is because you're trying to build a continuity in people's mind so that when they see it, that they're able to attribute it to you. So that's why, going back to the Downy example, and I'm using a consumer products because that's what people can, you can go to the shelf and see this. It's harder to see it when you're doing a B2B business, but hopefully you're understanding how to translate these elements now. Like the Downy, you're right, April. Like the traditional Downy in the mass, call it the mass or the general or the primary base product is blue. It's Downy blue. It'll always be Downy blue. That thing will never change, right? But as you're thinking about the premium Downy can't be the base Downy color. It has to be something different. It is a darker blue, right? But the thing that's the same, the bottle shape was originally the same. They started changing the bottle shape to more of an hourglass, more of a premium look. It was black as a primary color, but the rose translated. So the rose in the logo, the rose in the cap, those things translated. So there's enough cueing there that people are like, oh, I get it. It's part of Downy. I can trust it. It's part of Downy. Interestingly enough, the product benefit is different, but the scent is also the cue that keeps it consistently in the family, right? So that's the other thing to think about too, is that from the product benefit standpoint, and this can be in a B2B or it can be in a consumer products category, is what is those things that are people going to see in those triggers and those cues that people are going to know, oh, this is your product. In Downy's case, it's scent. It's not fabric enhancement. Well, I guess it was not fabric. It is fabric enhancement. It's not the benefit of the softening. Okay. Yes. So that was originally actually why we changed the whole category. And that was actually my naming if I was going to claim it. But so that's why we now call it something different, right? So it kind of gets to that more overall category of what you do, but it's not the softening benefit that is the category thread. It's the actual scent. So that's another example that kind of helped where it might not have been so obvious.
Still need help in growing your marketing smarts? Contact us through our website, forthright-people.com. We can help you become a savvier marketer through coaching or training you and your team or doing the work on your behalf. Please also help us grow the podcast by rating and reviewing on your player of choice and sharing with at least one person. Now, go show off your marketing smarts.